Spring is in the air, and it's the season for growth and new experiences in your career. Explore the country with rewarding travel assignments through Arias Medical Group. Know a PT? Make a referral and earn up to $1,000. To learn more, call 1-800-340-2619 or visit ariusmedical.com. That's ariusmedical.com.
This is the PT Pintcast. Podcast that talks about physical therapy over beer. Bringing together clinicians, researchers, and forward-thinking PTs in a show that's anything but boring.
Let there be beer!
This is the PT Pintcast with your host, Jimmy McKay.
All right, we should probably start the show.
Yeah, sure.
All right, the best conversations happen at happy hour. Welcome to ours. The next episode of the PT Pintcast starts right now. Still at CSM. This is the, it's like a four-day conference, which lasts about 4 weeks, it feels like. It feels like Vegas. Because when you're in a conference center, there's no windows, no idea what time of day it is. And you have no idea just the passage of time. So we just did a bunch of interviews the last couple days. I don't know which episode number this is going to be when it comes out, but it's going to be
14, maybe?
It's going to be maybe 14. It'll be like 170 something. But you, the guy standing next to me right now, you were episode four.
There we go.
Eric Mira back on the show. So thanks for coming out.
Yeah, no problem.
When people talk about CSM and like when you try to reach out, when I first started this podcast, I was like, hey, can we have some time at CSM? I just want to bump into you. People were like, I don't have time.
Right.
And originally I was like, all right, they're busy, you know, they're, you know, big PT. And now I get it. You don't have any time at CSM. So when someone's like, I'll talk, I'll give you 20 minutes. You're like, that's not them blowing you off. That's right. Them legitimately being like, I would love to give you an hour. Yep. I don't have like
exactly
20 minutes to rub together.
Yep.
So thank you. So how's CSM been for you this year?
It's been great. We've been really excited. We keep expanding our programming. So background,
sports section.
I'm sports section program chair.
I just figured it goes without saying, but I should probably say so people know.
Been doing it for about, this is my fourth year doing it. We've been trying to move in a more scientific direction over those years, trying to make this more of a scientific conference. It's always been a scientific conference. It's always been, the platforms have just always been down in the basement. And this is our second year of pulling them out of the basement and putting them up on the big stage.
And what were a couple that, you know, kind of stick out to you? What were some ones that you were really excited to share with people?
Well, the way we did is we actually would have like a little series of about four platforms that we presented along with some point-counterpoint dialogue from expert presenters and some case studies to apply those platforms. So we had some on ACL. There's a really interesting one that was done early in the conference with they were looking at the likelihood of a second injury after ACL reconstruction and using 7 months as the cutoff, so 7 months from surgery. And I think it was like a 70% more higher likelihood if you let them return to play before 7 months.
Really?
Some people have talked about 9 months. There's definitely some gray area there.
I'm sure nobody with an ACL wants to hear that.
Exactly. But, I mean, the other point is just because you did 7 months doesn't mean
it's
that
bulletproof.
That's, you know,
right,
bulletproof and there's no big deal. But what they're finding is that there's something that kind of has to happen that even if you're kind of hitting all your benchmarks, you may not be, you may not have all the tools yet. The problem is understanding what those measurements are. So what we do know is that by doing a comprehensive rehab program that makes sure that you're accounting for strength deficits, which seems to be one of the biggest glaring things in the early phases, and then also a glaring problem later in the people who are having issues. But if you're solving those problems and then giving them a lot of free practice in general, it's going to take a minimum of about 7 months or so. Some people will say, like I said, 9 months, but there was an interesting study presenting here that said, you know, that number may be even more dramatic if you look at it from a seven-month perspective.
So, that's cool. And, of course, no patient wants to hear that.
Well, no.
But I'm different. I can do probably 5 months or four months, right? I could do that.
Yeah.
Want to talk about where people can come hang out with you like we're doing right now. You're coming to my neck of the woods.
Oh, that's right.
You're coming to Marymount.
Yeah, I am.
What are the dates on that?
I wish I knew. I know it's in May.
All right, May. Hang on.
You can put a link. I mean, I think I want to say late May, but it could be.
We'll put the link up. You're doing a course.
Yes.
What are you going to talk about?
It's going to be hip and knee. And it's you know, I think the subtitle of it is complex understanding for simple solutions or simple application. And that's kind of the idea is, you know, a lot of people think that in order to, as you start to learn something more and more and the complexity and just how, you know, ACL is a great example, you know, it seems like such a simple thing, but all the things going on around an ACL reconstruction are so like infinitely complicated, especially when you start adding the psychology of the patient, the complexity of the nervous system, the complexity of a simple muscle coming together and recruiting to generate force. All of those things are, and you know, the biomechanics, it becomes so complicated, and people think, oh, so I have to be thinking of all these things at all times. It's like, no. The reality is you have to look to where all they all intersect, and how, by taking a big step back and looking at the big picture, you'll see, oh, I just need to, like I was just saying, it may just be that you got to target that quadricep early and often. There is some, you don't want to over target or anything like that, but it can be just as simple as solve the problem of the quadricep, and a lot of other things kind of fall in line out of that, and it can be very simple. A lot like our running retraining is a big thing that we're seeing that right now, that they look at, stride length, foot strike position, knee flexion, talking about adduction at the hip. All of these things you could be looking at, but what the researchers are starting to find is if you just increase that cadence about 5 to 10% faster than what the runner is comfortable with, they all kind of solve themselves. So it's actually all that complexity brings you back around to very simple solutions, and that's the key to things.
But I'll tell you, I'll just speak for students and a sure. new grad like me. When you have all those variables, of course, I want to make sure I have all those variables. There's no way I'm going to be able to track all those things at the same time, right? No matter how long I'm a PT.
Yeah.
But
even if you had a multi-imaging lab or
right.
something like that, yeah.
But I remember for me, just being in front of a patient for the first time, I'm like sweating. I'm like, what? I'm supposed to look at, let's make sure I look at all these things. And then, of course, the seasoned, CI in the room with me is always like, oh, yeah, just look at that. And I'm like, but I'm looking at the tendon. Like, shh, relax. They're eating a sandwich, barely paying attention. Like, oh, no, did you see that? And you're like,
yeah.
But aren't I supposed to make it? So that's kind of cool. The course is going to say, oh, look, yeah. it is complicated, but it doesn't have to be.
That's right.
I mean, it kind of sounds like the name of Adam's course. Like, the shoulder complex, doesn't have to be complicated.
Right.
So now we're just doing it for hip and knee. Let's just go down the whole, we'll go down the whole body.
As a matter of fact, Adam and I do a course together. We're going to be in Chicago.
At Entropy, yeah.
That's actually the first weekend in May. I know that. So I'm definitely not in Washington, D.C. the first weekend in May.
Yep.
But Adam and I are going to do a three-day course. We did it in London as a two-day course last year where I talked about hip, he talked about shoulder. And we're going to do that again this time. But the problem we had in London was that we also like to talk about critical thinking and why those things matter. So the nice thing is that Adam and I are going to talk for the whole first day is going to be on that clinical thinking, clinical application,
get that out of the way.
Dynamical systems, which I think is something I talked about last time I was on your podcast. So we get all that out of the way. And then we're going to say, all right, now let's talk about the hip. And all of a sudden, we get really streamlined when we start talking about the hip and really streamlined when we start talking about the shoulder, because you'll see that concept of that complexity boiling down into simple what we call inputs from a dynamical system.
That's cool. Where can people find information about where you're going to be? You're going to be at Marymount in late May,
yeah.
Marymount University in Arlington, Virginia, mm-hmm. worth the ride.
Sure.
So is there a site that everybody can just hit for?
Yeah, so they just go to my main website for those kinds of things is thesciencept.com. And then there's a courses link, and that just lists them all out. I've got some private courses that are not open. I've got my next public one, I think, is in Bozeman in April. And then I'll be the one in Chicago at Entropy with Adam. Adam's going to be actually coming to Portland for a day.
Nice.
Tuesday, it's already selling out. Midweek, one day, it's selling out.
He shows up to a Portland on a Tuesday and sells out?
Exactly.
No one sells out Portland on a Tuesday.
Exactly right. and then we'll go into Chicago, and then we'll be at Marymount, as you said, in May. And then I go, I think I have Vancouver, BC.
Jeez.
I got two dates in Australia. I've got three dates in Europe. I think it's Amsterdam, Helsinki, Stockholm. And then it looks like we're also going to have one in Las Gatas, California.
Ladies and gentlemen, the world tour.
That's right.
By Eric Mira. That's cool. All right, we'll take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about, we'll do three questions.
Okay.
And we want to dive into your podcasts. You're pretty
Sounds
comfortable
good.
With the headset mic on right now. And we want to talk about Dad. Why and where your podcast has gone and where it's going to go. Back in
Sounds
60
good.
Seconds in the PT Pinecast. Don't move.
Working at his orbicularis oris until failure. Jimmy McKay on the PT Pinecast.
Spring is in the air. It's the season for growth and new experiences in your physical therapy career. Explore the country with healthcare staffing agency, Aureus Medical Group. You'll find rewarding travel and full-time career opportunities nationwide. Know a PT? Make a referral and earn up to $1,000. To speak with a recruiter, call 1-800-340-2619 or visit aureusmedical.com. That's A-U-R-E-U-S medical.com.
Do you treat patients with chronic pain, recurring sports injuries, or posture issues? Then check out Rock Tape, the world's best kinesiology tape.
Stickier, stretchier,
and superior to competing tapes. Rock tape stays on through any activity
for up to 7 days.
Physical therapists qualify for medical pricing. Get started at rocktape.com/start. Rock tape also offers CEUs nationwide, so you can learn how to use the world's best tape
with cutting edge, evidence-informed techniques
while earning the continuing education credits you need.
Get started at rocktape.com.
Let's give a nice, warm welcome to...
We're back. It's so great to see you. Let's get back to the show now. Back in the PT Pinecast with Eric Mara. Again, episode number 4.
Sure.
To now episode, 100 and something. It's cool to have a progression like that. And I told this story last night. People were saying, well, what do you got lined up tomorrow? I was like, Eric Mara's coming on the show. And they said, that's cool. You've had him on before. I was like, episode 4, recorded it in my basement. And didn't really know what I was doing. Like, it was a lot of moving around, but not a lot happening.
Yeah.
And then a couple of my classmates were sitting like kind of off camera. My roommate was off camera and of Skype, and we were talking. And when I hung up, I was just like, it was like 11 o'clock at night. And I'm like, pumped. I'm like, I'm not going to bed for 3 hours. Yeah. And one of my classmates was like, well, who wasn't listening, was like, what happened? Like, I don't know. I don't remember what we talked about, but I remember how I felt when I was done. And I'm like, I'm going to have to go back and edit that because I don't even know what happened. And they were like, that's cool, I think. Yeah. I'm like, I don't even know. I'll show it to you in 3 days. So it was cool to have that sort of progression from, here's this idea, I'm just going to interview people, and then I've got this thing, I don't know what it is,
and
I want to put it out.
Yeah.
So I want to thank you for being there and just saying yes right away at episode 4 when I said, when I had nothing to prove myself by saying, I got this idea.
That was the six-pack, right?
That was the six-pack. Yeah. We did 6 episodes to kick off. I'm like, if there's nothing past this, that's okay, but I'm going to try it 6 times. 3 questions, not six-pack, 3 questions from RS Medical Staffing. First up is, you travel the world. Right now you're based in
Portland,
Black
Oregon.
Diamond is in Portland, Oregon. Yep. If you could go anywhere in the U.S. and practice as a PT for a month and stay there, where would you like to go geographically?
It probably wouldn't be geographic as much as just a location of a facility.
Okay.
You know, a ton of respect for the people. One of my passions is ACL reconstruction.
Yep.
So definitely Ohio State, Cincinnati Children's Hospital. So Ohio State, again, the podcast that we do, we've had Laura Schmidt from there, looking at Cincinnati Children's Hospital with Mark Paterno there. Would love to spend some time working with Rich Wheely, which I've co-authored some papers with down in Eastern Carolina. And also, just go hang out with my buddy JW in Madison, Wisconsin.
Yeah.
Hudson, Wisconsin, just outside Minneapolis. So what they're doing over at University of Wisconsin, Brian Heiderscheid's work, and those guys, just to shadow and just hang out and do that kind of thing.
It'd be fun if we could actually take to if schedules allowed that, just for like almost sabbaticals, like within the year, be kind of cool.
I that's actually something I do recommend people do, is if you'd be surprised, call up somebody you have a ton of respect for, and if you're willing to take the time and just say, you know what, I'm going to come out for a week, do you mind if I just like some student volunteer, if I can just shadow you for a week? That's something that surgeons do very regularly, and it's a very normal thing to do, and you just take the time out of your own schedule. And even if it's just, I'll shadow you for a day, we get that all the time at our clinic, where people will, they're coming to town for something.
And that's not a bother?
No.
It's good to hear you say no, it's not a bother, because even I'm kind of an extrovert, and I wouldn't necessarily do that because I was like, I don't want to step on toes, or I don't know if they would like that, or am I a bother, or something like that. So that's cool to hear you say that. Yeah, you're right. Now, and then another example is that is I've asked, 100 plus people to be like, can I have, a half hour of your time to talk? And, less than 1% says no. Everybody's like, sure, when? That's right. Sure. Yeah, absolutely. When? Second question is, what's something you've either read or currently reading that really inspired you?
I've read a couple books lately that were really thought-provoking. One is The War on Science. It's by, Sean Otto. The War on Science was written last year, actually. And it takes a look at science from a cultural perspective and what is happening with this, this idea of alternative facts. What is science? Science is the pursuit of objective truth. And there's this postmodernist movement right now, which is that all truth is subjective. And there is a reality that there are subjective truths out there. For example, you can have the African-American experience in the United States is a different experience than, say, the wealthy white person who comes from privilege in some way, or the Muslim who's coming into this country and they are brought up in a certain way and they have a certain way that the world interacts with them and that they interact with the world.
Those things are different.
Those things are very different. Those are what are known as subjective truths. But there is some objective truths, like the earth going around the sun, and that are just not up for debate. And so the question question is, when we come from a scientific perspective, is what is the question we're trying to answer? Are we trying to answer a subjective truth, or are we trying to answer an objective truth? And if we come to a conclusion that there's an objective truth, there is a certified, quote-unquote, process to achieve that.
It's science.
Science, exactly right. So the problem is when people start to have their personal belief being picked apart by a good scientific process, they'll start switching that to a different view. And that's just the way the human mind works. That's just classic confirmation
bias. There was somebody put up a screenshot of the Flat Earth Society's Facebook page.
Right.
And their tagline was, the Flat Earth Society has members around the world. I think you just shot yourself in the foot on
that one. Exactly right. And then the other book, the title probably sounds a little controversial, but it's How to Make an Atheist. The interesting thing from the book is that it actually doesn't get into that over there as much as you would think it would. What it actually gets into is, how do you know the things that you know? And so it's an exploration of the Socratic method of teaching, which is that you don't tell anybody anything. You just ask some questions as to how are they coming about their conclusions. So if you go back to Socrates and you look at how he went about his life, he never said anything. He just asked people questions and said, well, why do you believe that? Okay, well, if that's why you believe that, then why don't you believe this over here? Because I can use that same thought process. In philosophy, that's known as epistemology. How do you know what you know? The metaphysics would be, what do you know? So they say, don't argue whether or not something is true. Argue how you know it's true and why you don't use the same process of justification for something you disagree with. We see that in physical therapy practice all the time. I love this treatment. It's awesome. Well, why do you do it? Well, because I know in my hands it works, and it works every time I do it, and I see awesome results. Okay, that's great. Now let's bring over somebody that, practices crystals. They say, when I use crystals, the patient gets better every time, and it works every time. So why don't you practice crystals?
Right.
Because it's the same argument that's being used there. So not saying that, I could say that argument of it works when I load somebody and I do load application to a tendinopathy case, for example. I could use that same argument. The point being is that's a very bad argument to use. I need to use some epistemology to figure out, why do I really do what I do? And getting people to think that way, I think, is really helpful.
Yeah, it's just a different thought process.
Yeah.
And this is the way, physical therapy has to evolve. Don't just hold on to something because I've done it.
And also, that's the best way to change somebody's mind, is to argue epistemology, not to argue metaphysics.
Okay.
Because if two people are clashing as to why dry needling seems to be a hot topic right now, and why do you do dry needling and why don't you? And people are like, well, I'm bringing, quote, my science, and you're bringing, quote, your science.
There's just science, man.
There's a science. There is an objective truth there. And we need to be honest about our approach to doing that. But the point being, you're not going to change somebody's mind about dry needling if you're trying to attack dry needling directly. You have to attack why they came to the conclusion that they believe in dry needling or don't believe in dry needling. Because you have bad reasoning processes and get lucky that you're actually right.
Yeah. All right. Third question.
Yep.
Who's somebody in the field of physical therapy that the audience should know more about?
I like the stuff Matt Itherburn is doing. We had him on our podcast. He's at one of the Ohio State's, one of the doctoral students right now. And it's mostly doctoral students that are the ones that are flying on the radar right now. And that's actually something that at CSM we're trying to bring them up more on the stages to let them get their ideas out a little bit. And interestingly, if they're really good about the scientific process, they can challenge some pretty big names and some pretty big ideas that way. But Matt's been doing some really interesting work looking at correlations between quad index and landing mechanics after ACL reconstruction. And so, again, that argument of, a little bit of chicken and egg is, do we fix the landing mechanics or do we fix the... And so what he was able to show is that you can predict landing mechanics just looking at strength, specifically the quad index. And, one of his mentors, Laura Schmidt, has done some similar research as well, but Matt did specifically single leg landing. David Bell will be another one out of University of Wisconsin. He's an athletic trainer, a researcher as well. Similar research looking at these ACL patients that are 2 years out and finding that they may still lack the quad strength on that side, but now they're passing their functional tests. But when you look at their mechanics, they're very poor mechanics. And positing that it could be, that problem of lacking quad strength for 2 years, and you develop the new process for landing, which could be a problem. They also have more hip strength, which, we all talk about, well, let's strengthen the hip to protect the knee. The strength in the hip may be an output of a weak knee.
Compensation?
Compensation, exactly. Okay. Which may not, it may or may not be a good thing.
Yeah. So. I like the fact that you mentioned two students. You know, I think that going back to
David is a full PhD professor. Yeah.
But, you know, younger guys, I'm guessing, or, coming up. But you're saying, like, if your science, if your kung fu is good, if your science is good, mm-hmm. it doesn't matter. I mean, you can question, you know, any of the big names here, big names here at CSM, but they're not big names because they yell a lot. Typically, the people who are big names is because they're kung fu is good. Their science is good. So, you know, I think a lot of times, you know, younger people might get painted, well, what's your experience? You've been out of school for a year. You're a student. What can you know?
Yeah.
Well, if you followed a good, you know, method of questioning, then your science is science. You found a way to test something, and now your mojo is good mojo.
That's exactly right. And that's where the other name I would drop would be, let's go the other direction and go to an old dinosaur. That would be George Davies. George Davies is 104 years old, I think, at this point.
You're serious?
No. Oh, okay. No, but he'd love to hear that. George is—he's developed a lot of great clinician scientists. George is somebody that I've watched him change his mind many times over the well over a decade I've known him. Where he—and you'll see in his research, you'll see how, you know what—we're going down a wrong line of questioning. We're asking the wrong questions. Let's go ahead and turn those questions, and he'll refute his own opinions from years before, and it's been wonderful. And you look at the people who've trained under George Davies. You know, we've got Todd Ellenbecker, we've got Rob Mansky, Brian Heiderscheidt, J.W. Matheson. We have all these people that are notorious for being good thinkers and for switching gears on things when they're like, you know what, I've changed my opinion. But if you had seen them 5 years ago when they gave their other opinion, you would have also heard them being very tentative about their opinion and not being very precious with their opinion, being able to say, you know, this is kind of what I'm thinking, this is what the evidence seems to be pointing at right now, but I could also see, and lo and behold, they'll list out in their list of other possibilities the thing it ended up being five years later.
Yeah, exactly. Do you want to get it right or be right?
That's exactly
people who beat their chest want to be right. I'm right, listen to me, I'm the guru. Do you want to get it right? I think this is this, but it also could be this. I'm not 100% sure just yet, so it's good. I mean, and that's a bold thing to be able to say, is like, mm-hmm. I could be wrong.
Yep.
And then eventually being able to say, you know what, I was wrong, and I'm going to go this direction now. Mm-hmm. That's cool. That's a cool list right there. So you're comfortable with the headset microphone on.
Yep.
Got a podcast network.
Yeah.
So what's a pimp the podcast? You got PT Inquest, PT Podcast. You've got Pain Science and Sensibility.
Yep.
What else? I mean, you're starting the whole cable network.
Yeah, exactly.
For podcasts. And I like the fact that students bring up PT Inquest all the time because, man, that's you and J.W. Matheson talking about research.
Yes.
And the fact that students are going out of their way specifically to go, you know, I'm going to listen to this.
Yeah.
I kind of understand most of what they're talking about, but I'm like, the more you listen, the more you're going to get it. So just, I mean, it's like voyeuristic a little bit. Just listen to these two people talk about this thing, and mm-hmm. eventually, like, you'll be able to speak the same way. You'll be able to talk the same language. So where can people find those? Let's get that out.
So if you go to just ptpodcast.com. So the history is, I started that. Actually, the first interview is George Davies on that. And that was an interview show much like you're doing. And I got to give you the biggest kudos for being well over 100 episodes doing an interview podcast. I got to 18, I think, maybe 19 or 20 might be on there. That's how much attention I've paid to it. And I can't do it. It's just too hard for me to stay that engaged, that motivated, that interested in it. It was much easier for us when we did PT Inquest, which PT Podcast, I'm not saying I'm not going to actually do another PT Podcast episode, but that's very much on the back burner.
Sure.
And
you only have X amount of time.
That's right. So we do PT Inquest. We do it 12 weeks in a row, and then we take 12 weeks off. And then we come back for 12 weeks in a row and 12 weeks off.
Probably do that.
It's nice.
You should probably take a week or two off. Run a rerun every once in a while.
Yeah, exactly. And we've toyed with the idea of doing, we've done extrasodes, which I'll just basically just read from the blog and post it.
Right.
And weirdly popular. I was like, well, you can just go read from the blog. But they're like, no, but I'm subscribed to a podcast.
Your voice is very soothing.
Well, and they can listen to it while driving. So, I make loud noises a lot.
That's a good
time,
point.
So.
Somebody pointed out to me, I'm not saying their opinion isn't valid, but they're like, you know, I'd like to see this. Can you videotape it? And I was like, I'll be honest, I'm not a video guy. I was a radio guy. And I don't consume that. Because if I have to sit in front of the computer and watch...
Exactly.
I mean, I'm listening to something and I'm doing something else, or I'm cleaning my room or whatever. So
mowing
I like
the lawn, going for a jog, all these things. Yeah.
People are like, "Oh, podcast." That's like the bleeding edge of technology. I'm like, it's spoken word.
It's exactly.
This is
the oldest thing we
have. This is Neanderthals around like a campfire,
exactly,
like grunting at each other. This is it. It's just the fact that you can leverage technology in a mixing board or whatever, and get that spoken word to other people.
Yeah.
It's a little weird. Like we've been heard in 106 countries. I can't name 106 countries.
Yeah, me either.
And then I always get like, how to get there. Mm-hmm. A classmate of mine was like, how'd you get there? I'm like, no idea.
Yeah.
And when people tell me, hey, I listen, how'd you find out about it? I don't really remember.
Right.
I'm like, cool. Well, thanks for helping me out.
How'd you get so many listeners? I put it out.
Put it out. Listen, man, I put out and people listen.
That's right.
It's all I know.
That's right. And the other question, how did you start a podcast? Well, I went on Google and I typed, how do you start a podcast?
Yeah.
And that was it.
Do people ask you to help them start a podcast?
A little bit, yeah. And
I get that a little bit.
I actually just had that conversation an hour ago.
So the answer is yes.
And actually we've had some people that have started some little small podcasts that they do kind of internally, like within a little, like not a formal special interest group, but like their own friends that kind of got together, and it's a way that they can keep communicating in that way. And because it's not terribly expensive to do. You can do it on the cheap and do something decent. You definitely can spend a lot of money.
And you can.
I'm looking at your equipment here. And do something of a very high quality. But, you know, content is king. There's a reason that they say that. So.
That's it.
But yeah, I mean, we just broke 100 episodes, which, you know, that's more just a matter of attrition than anything else. And especially in the format that we did, we just now finally got into a formalized format, because originally it was just, we're just doing this for a while, and then we just quit for a few months.
You get burned.
Exactly, you get burned out,
you know.
So what I've been really happy about with especially PT Inquest is, and being that's the one that I'm most intimately involved with, is, you know, throughout this conference, people coming up to me and introducing themselves, a lot of students, probably more than half of the people that approach JW and I here are doing their own journal club now, and they are doing it off the model of PT Inquest. And the thing that we stress, and we try to do that on the podcast, is that we're just looking at a paper, trying to be as objective as possible. And you shouldn't hear us, you know, taking a paper and telling you all the ways it's perfect or all the ways it's crap. It's kind of a combination of the two. And so the thing that I'm always talking about is when you read a paper, a really good paper has cleaved off all of the alternative hypotheses effectively to say, this is why it's not this, this is why it's not that, this is why it's not this thing over here. A really poorly done paper is the one that you're just sitting there going, oh my God, that could have been this over here going on, all these other things.
If you've got a second voice in your head, it's probably not a good sign.
That's exactly right. And that's what I'm hearing a lot from students now as I'm sitting in class. They say, you know, when they used to read a paper, they would read it and just read it as, this is truth that I'm ingesting.
Right.
And now they read it, and the whole time they're like, they just hear these bells going off, and they're like,
could it be this?
That's a warning sign that they did this, and that's a warning sign that they didn't control for that. And they start picking it apart. And again, when you have a paper that there's a lot of flaws in the way it was done. You know, we can talk about pre-registration being a big factor right now, whether or not they even pre-registered it, whether it's a systematic review or an RCT, that they're sitting there going, it's not that the conclusion is wrong. It's that it's not supported by these data. That's the thing. So you walk away and you just walk away. You don't sit here and say, well, that's garbage, therefore their conclusion is wrong.
Okay.
It's the conclusion is not supported.
Okay.
And leave it at that. So you don't have to be so dichotomous and black and white and saying
good or bad.
This is good or bad. It's just, you know what? This study did not advance our knowledge.
Okay. Look what PT Inquest is able to do. I mean, you just brought up how, you know, people and students specifically are bringing up the research in a way to journal club. What does that do? What's that effect? Do a study on your podcast 5, 10, 15 years from now. Mm-hmm. How many more journal clubs pop up? And what does that do to the person in a journal club? Yeah. What does that do to the, and then, of course, what does that do to the profession? You're being more critical about this thing called research, which is the thing we should base, we're going back to science, we should base every one of our thoughts, one of our objective treatment measures on this thing called science.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I really like to drive home is that my mission in my career is to make the profession of physical therapy more scientific. And people misunderstand that as saying we need more randomized controlled trials to cite. This is not about proving that what you're doing is right. This is about using the proper process to move your thinking forward.
Right.
That's what I'm trying to achieve. I really don't, you know, as I said before, that epistemology metaphysics thing, I don't care what you believe. I do not care at all. I care why you believe it. And that's the conversation that we're trying to have. And that's something that we're trying to do here at CSM with some of our program with the sports section, is trying to get these people up on a podium who can show the nuance of two people with very good clinical reasoning skills or critical thinking skills, more importantly, who are arriving at different conclusions. And that's beautiful, actually.
Because one of them might be right, one of them might be wrong, or they might be wrong.
And if they're both coming up with very good critical thinking skills, they're both flexible to be changed in their thinking. And that's the thing that, you know, with PT Inquest I've been really proud of is, you know, over the years, we've been doing it for about 5 years now, we've gone from, you know, definitely a lot of new students and a lot of new grads that are now practicing clinicians, some of them 5, 10 years out, and talking about how when I started listening to PT Inquest, I completely changed my practice. I think about things completely differently now, and I feel like my practice has moved forward and is not stuck in a rut because of that. And I was able to embrace change and not feel so threatened by it so much.
How cool does that feel?
It's wonderful. And then the other half is that we get a ton of researchers contacting us and saying, hey, especially those new researchers that are like doctoral students going for their PhDs, saying, you know, I'm starting, you know, my advisor, I'm looking at their old research, and I'm like, man, there's a lot of flaws in the way they're doing this.
Uh-oh.
And now that I've set this up, do you mind, let me bounce a couple ideas off you? What am I missing here? What are JW and Eric going to pick apart when this paper is published? So, you know, that's been a big thing. Because we've seen, you know, that's in the news right now where a couple of these, you know, it wasn't in our profession particularly, but it was in like nutrition and psychology in particular, where these advisors have, like, they'll spend 5 years collecting data on something, and then their hypothesis was not supported. So what they're doing is handing them off to their students, their doctoral students, and saying, hey, here's a big pile of data. I spent a lot of time and effort collecting this. I don't want it to, quote, go to waste. Find a nugget of statistical significance in there so we can publish this. That is a cardinal sin of science. You do not go back to data and try to massage it to generate something out. Everything in science should be, from looking at it from that perspective, should be some sort of a prospective view of it. You set up a study to answer a question, and then it's going to answer the question. The problem is the answer might not be what you're hoping for, right, or looking for. And that is a result. Because a lot of people say, well, it didn't find anything. Actually,
found something.
It found something.
It's not what you
and
want.
And that something is nothing. Is that there is no effect.
That should be
and
a t-shirt.
And that's so useful.
That should be a t-shirt. You found something, but that something is actually nothing.
That's right.
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Let's see. Every episode that we do is a pint. And before we're done with pints, we do shots. Parting shots of wisdom.
This is the parting shot.
Powered by Optum. Optum offers weekend courses that are Monday morning applicable, utilizing approaches that make sense.
They promote excellence in hands-on treatment, exercise prescription, pain science, and clinical reasoning, offering a COMT,
as well as an APTA-accredited fellowship in orthopedic manual therapy, both online and in-person mentoring, with locations in Houston, Dallas, and Scottsdale, Arizona. Find out more online
at optumfellowship.com.
What's something you'd want to leave the audience with going forward after we leave this thing we call the tornado of CSM? What's something we should pay attention to more?
You know, just always questioning yourself. I think Penn Jillette said the idea that you want to believe the most is the one that you should challenge the most. And that's something that I think is really true. And again, not from a perspective of saying I'm wrong, but from the perspective, I like to keep things positive. So I like to say, don't attack your idea, but consider alternative hypotheses and think about those as well. And the more alternative hypotheses you have, the less dogmatic you'll be about something and the less you'll identify with it. That's another thing that becomes a problem. People will identify as, somebody will say, I'm a manual therapist, or I'm an exercise therapist, all these things. And now that you've become identified and that's part of your identity, it's literally a psychological quandary
to separate
that out. So you have to be kind of fluid and entertaining these other ideas. And what you'll find a lot of times is that some ideas are just garbage. They've been disproven. And we are really good in science at showing that something is not true. Cleave those away and just get them out of there. And then the other ones that are remaining, you don't just stop and go, well, it could also be these two things. Your next job is to find a way to split those off.
Keep
or
going.
The one you preferred may split off.
Yeah.
And that's the best advice I can give for anybody at any point in their career as they go forward.
I like it. Your Twitter handle is?
Just at Eric Mara, and it's Eric with a K.
I thought it was
Mara with an EI.
I thought it was Eric of the Mara. Or is that just the name that pops up?
So, sometimes that's the name. I put all sorts of stupid things. Yeah.
Like Eric of the Mara.
Yeah.
And the website for finding out where you're going to be, one more time?
TheSciencePT.com.
Cool.
And that's a blog that has a bunch of kind of thought experiments.
Yeah, just
like that
go there, poke around is my suggestion, because you're going to get into some cool stuff.
Yeah.
Eric, appreciate you stopping by, and thanks for being on the show again.
All right, no problem. Thanks for having me.
Awesome.
The PT Pinecast is a product of PT Pinecast LLC.
It is hosted and produced by PT Pinecast CEO Jimmy McKay,
with executive producer Rachel German from the University of Wisconsin, Milwaukee,
and CBO Sky Donovan from Marymount University.
We talk PT, drink beer, and record it.
This has been another pour from the PT Pinecast.
The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. Our lawyers made us read that.
Effective clinical practice is grounded in effective research.
And that is what the Foundation for Physical Therapy does.
For over 35 years now, the Foundation for Physical Therapy has made it its mission to fund and publicize physical therapy research. Their researchers have helped introduce movement in babies with cerebral palsy,
integrate dancing to alleviate ailments in patients with Parkinson's,
and develop video games to implement physical rehabilitation. The work of their recipients would not be possible without the support of donors like you.
Your support can help us continue to elevate the physical therapy profession
and work towards creating a world
that thrives on mobility.
You have the power to make a difference.
Join the power of one
and contribute today at foundationforpt.org.
That's foundation, the number 4, pt.org.
Donate today and experience the power of one for the Foundation for Physical Therapy.
Online at foundation, the number 4, pt.org.